see them as attainable. As you choose to further advance your scope of information, you seek a different type of education. Through self-education, you discover that information flows quite freely on just about every topic. Unfortunately, it is easy to mix opinions with fact when finding information, and accuracy becomes hard to distinguish. But let's think about opinions and understand what you attempt to distinguish. Isn't all information someone's opinion of their own reality? At some point or another, a formulated opinion became an accepted view by the masses, and then grew into a fact. The beauty of self-education is that it is more about personal opinions rather than proven information. It is one way to look at a certain situation, and only one. If you hear the same information over and over again, then you eventually accept the information and don't seek an alternate answer or more information. However, if you differ with one man's opinion, then you continue to seek more information. Ultimately, your self-education teaches you how the system works, and you don't just accept the system you are shown. Diversity initiates innovation, as one man's view of the world differs from another. The more you understand how others think, the better positioned you are to create your own opinion using all you observed and heard. The important factor here is that most people agree or disagree with an opinion, but rarely look at it as simple information. They fail to understand that education is not about disagreement, but absorption of information. It should not be looked at from any emotional angle, even if the information defies our existing beliefs to their core. You are the byproduct of your observations, and so are those with different opinions and environments. As a result, you see an alternate reality based on the education you received so far. Those with more articulated opinions have often done more research or are more involved, but their information is also derived from someone else's opinion. Education equals information, and this equation is important for growing towards the third circle. Selective education, on the other hand, is when you possess natural talent and choose to seek specific information. In other words, you listen to the opinions and understand them, but are choosing to look into the abstract and uncover more of what others don't see. Selective education is more about theories based on information and your ability to link together concepts as a result. As your mindset evolves and takes interest in a specific topic, it pushes you to seek the unknown around that subject. This interest pushes your need to venture where others failed. You discover a gap of information, which leads you to innovate if you possess enough information and confidence to undertake the issue itself. Selective education is the understanding of concepts rather than things. It is your ability to identify the connectors of life. A great example is understanding how Ford is connected to Microsoft, and then understanding how the automotive industry is connected to the IT industry. You need to know what IT-related services or products can be created to innovate both industries. Your selective ability to understand one industry sparks your curiosity into the opposite one. You discover a world that others cannot see because they don't have your perspective. If you have an IT background, you somewhat know what to look for when it comes to technology and cars. You also know what may or may not be possible in this area, while someone from the automotive industry will not. This is how companies like Google and Microsoft compete for world domination in the technology sector. Innovation across other platforms is easy once you possess the skill set. All you need is the information that you previously ignored because you had no interest. Looking through a selective lens at a problem opens a new type of information, one that only you can see or seek. Every successful individual will tell you that they have not only educated themselves on the topic at hand, but also understand how it works. As a result, these people can identify a gap in their segment or a connected segment. Most entrepreneurs find business ideas in a field of past experience by looking at it through a new lens. Most of this curiosity is gauged once again through observation and past experiences. Think about how you looked at your first job. How would you describe it? Now, Fast forward to 4 jobs later and imagine how effective you would be at that first job again. You would be better because your new experiences have made you more aware and capable, which is ultimately why education cannot outweigh experience. By identifying the gap between education and experience, and then innovating through entrepreneurship, you will be rewarded with a monetary gain larger that exceeds what you would get from just working. You create a path that is no longer unknown to others. You will empower those people to seek their own self and selective education, and expand it even further. Money. Money is the most constant thing you witness at every age and at every stage of your life, which is why it becomes so hard to let go as you get older. Your entire life, at some point or another, relates to money somehow. You are told very young that you go to school to get a good job to make money, or that you should play sports so someday you can make lots of money. It is frequently the reason you are given for why you should do something, anything. The mere fact that money holds such weight in your entire life reinforces the understanding that making money is perhaps more important than anything else in life. So you value the fibrous paper more than your families and friends at times. Your focus, however, is not on growing money or even saving it, but rather making it. As an individual, you are graded according to your income, classified as high, middle, or low class, not how you live, which demonstrates how society is consumed by the idea of money. If you revisit the financial status a person is born into as the baseline for the life, you learn from an early age of the importance of money. Whether low, middle, or upper class, your path will include making it as well as include spending it. The only difference is the urgency towards how much of it you need to make. Nonetheless, the message itself of making money is reinforced by all cultures, all countries, and all societies, even by all wealth levels. This is the single observation and or message that every person is exposed to. Money, in its literal form, is a piece of paper you trade for time. That's correct. You do not trade money for goods. Someone else's time went into making the goods, or preparing the food, designing and implementing a technology, or even writing a book. Outside of the cost of goods, you trade this currency for their time as it relates to the item. You pay more for higher quality as it took more of someone's time or has more value, because ultimately you are purchasing not just the time it took to create something, but all the time it took for them to learn to create something too. If you understand money's relevance to time, as we discussed earlier, you then know what your time is worth. Once you understand the underlying truth about money, you start understanding something of more use. How much are others willing to pay for your time? When you understand that, through experiences, you become more aware of how to manipulate your environment as it pertains to money, which ultimately means it pertains to everything. This is the first time your mind grasps perception manipulation. It can often be the deciding factor when you find yourself choosing whether you become a manipulator or helper. It really comes down to your intentions at the end. If you have made money already and not just understood the concept, then you become a helper. But, on the other hand, when you have yet to apply what you know, you tend to veer towards manipulation as a means to an end. It's a very narrow distinction and often very closely related to the fine line between arrogance and confidence. Many self-help gurus are born at this stage of their life. They know how to make money with a great presentation that shows people what they know. What ends up happening is they share with you different ways you can make money because they know money holds such weight in your life, making it an irresistible lure. The reality is that they get rich off of it much faster than you, the person actually using the program. Most people are in the first circle and don't have enough control over their own lives to understand how to make money. So regardless of how much you teach them about the various methods available to make money, their inability to see things through will make them fail. No matter how good the system is, it won't work, but that futility won't keep them from trying over and over again. They never lose this desire to make money, as they are too late when comparing themselves to those who graduated this circle and feel the need to play catch-up. If these systems were geared to educated, driven, professional individuals in the second circle, the program simply wouldn't make money for the creators themselves. Remember the settlers and dreamers in the first circle, and the leaders and achievers in the second circle. People who can read through you will not be convinced to follow you unless you provide tremendous value. People in the second circle don't follow people in that same circle because they don't gain anything as a result. People in the second circle follow people in the third circle because it is different. Even though different does not mean better, it is an unrecognized alternative to people in the second circle. Like everything else, it raises their curiosity and compels them to seek more education. Like cheese for a mouse, money is what drives you. I am sure you have seen those cartoons that depict food being waved in front of the faces of riding animals to keep them going. Well, the self-help industry and the businesses that teach you how to make money end up doing just that. They wave money in front of you, just enough so you think you can get it. They want you to keep moving forward until you eventually give up. They know your senses and attributes are not trained enough to actually capture the money being dangled as bait, but they do not want you to blame them. They want you to blame yourself because you gave up, so you will most likely try again at some point. The exact same concept applies to the wellness industry and workout fads. The whole point is to show you these systems that require less and less time to get amazing results, but yet take so much discipline. Most of the people taking on these systems lack this important trait, which is why the fads work on them. Money itself is a byproduct of how you spend your time and how you create value for those around you. When used, it is to buy time, but when made, it is to sell your time. If you sell fruit, you feed those around you at a cost. And if you create computers, you provide a tool people use to once again make money, so it has value. Based on how well you do, what you create or do might be worth more money to some. You sell your time to an organization when you accept a job. You agree by accepting that your time is worth your pay. You are also indirectly saying that your experience and time, as of today, has that amount of value. If you sell yourself short, it is because you lack the confidence to accept that you are worth more than what others tell you you are. Understanding the value of time and money makes you a danger to all those around you, and certainly showcases a level of confidence that is unrivaled. You are born into the idea that making money is the single most important aspect of life. Therefore, you will focus your entire life chasing it. The problem with chasing money is that you never really understand the value, but rather focus on just getting more of it. On the other hand, chasing experiences in life enables you to understand the true value of time rather than money. Those who chase money never find fulfillment, which is why they continue to work just to earn it, even going past the point of having enough to live for a lifetime. When you follow this path, you become a believer that money is the way to keep score. Why are some people like Donald Trump always on the news? It is because their goal is to define themselves through how much money they have accrued. They publicly keep score, and it helps them. On the other hand, Sir Richard Branson or Bill Gates rarely make public appearances, because they don't prescribe to keeping score by means of monetary gain, but rather through fulfillment of actually helping change people's lives. Donald Trump's publicity stunts put him in the second circle. Bill Gates and Richard Branson's endeavors put them in the third. They all possess significant wealth. Money, as it pertains to the circles, is nothing more than leverage. Living in the second circle means you know how to make money. Living in the third circle means that money is merely a means to a greater purpose, but never the purpose itself. When you learn to make money, you discover what money can help you attain. You certainly understand, like everyone else in the world, that more money helps you attain more goods or comfort. More money is more entertainment, so you simply become emotional towards acquiring things, particularly if you didn't have all those things growing up. You feel the need to make up for all the times you didn't have toys or designer label clothes, and so you become materialistic and even greedy. This attitude is the direct result of lacking the necessary control over your emotional reaction to making money. Emotional actions and reactions are the key reasons that people fail or get hurt in general, and the connection is even more so with money. You are so attached to this paper that you value it more than just about anything else. You lose sight of your friends and family when you feel that your money is being threatened. Your inability to detach your emotions from money can greatly harm you. You can see that happen every day all around you. Think about every war in the world and how money is the center of attention. Divorce, for which the primary reason is money, and, of course, crime, where the sole reason is to attain money without earning it. These things do not happen at random. They happen when people choose to make a piece of paper more important than a human life, and are selfish enough since they are still in the second circle. I want you to understand the importance of letting go of the constant pursuit and emotional connection to your money. Instead, look at money as a means to an end, rather than the emotional connection of keeping score. If you look at money in a literal sense, and not a glorified one through your past observations, the wealthier you get, the less you actually see the paper money and assume that the numbers you see on a computer screen reflect who you are. This is absurd. When you see money as nothing more than paper, you then realize that, no matter how many times you miss or lose some, you will always have an opportunity to make it. You no longer miss out on opportunities or make bad decisions based on fears of losing money. Habits. At this stage of the game, success is primarily defined by how much money you can make in the least amount of time. You start developing habits along the way that will later be very useful to defining your existence. These habits, once more, are defined heavily by your observations of those in your entourage or those who influenced you. You have now chosen to carefully mimic these new people rather than those in your childhood observations. Observing the habits of the successful folks around you actually helps you more than you think. Their passion usually drives their routines, and they showcase those qualities in almost everything they do, even if not work-related. Habits and talent like consistency, acceptance of failure, balance, and leadership are qualities that you must master. At this point in the second circle, you can actually see these characteristics in action, as if you indirectly had a mentor. The habits you must learn to overcome and make a consistent part of your routine are as follow. Being proactive has a positive impact on your life and has gotten you this far. Think about when you applied for a job or chose to follow through on something you wanted rather than something you were obligated to do. In order to graduate past this stage, you will have to shift to being proactive. You must decide that hope and faith hold no relevance to your success and actions, but rather, everything that happens is in your control, and a matter of acting rather than thinking. Being proactive means more than anticipating. It also means taking action to prevent, which keeps you from ending up on the wrong side of the fence. If you think about just about every bad circumstance you have experienced, you can probably identify easily those whom you reacted to properly. Can you also look back and understand which of them could have been avoided altogether, requiring no reaction, had you instead taken action to prevent the situation or kept yourself from being in such a position? A great example of this is the housing crisis that struck the U.S. recently. Many people simply let themselves fall behind on their mortgage or payments. While that may have seemed like the only option at the time, they could have, instead, called their lender or lawyer and attempted to find a solution before failing to make their payment, not after. The same example can be applied to going out on a Saturday night. If you know someone whom you have had confrontations with is going to be at a certain place, stay away, regardless of how you feel or how many of your friends will be there. learn to proactively guide your life to keep you from going places that may compromise your goals. This skill set you must learn to master is the one that allows your proactive nature to think ahead a bit farther than most. Being proactive in another person's life evolves significantly as he or she goes through the motions of life and the circles. Most individuals in the first circle will think 3 to 6 months ahead, while those in the second circle think 1 to 5 years ahead, and certainly most of the people who have reached the third circle can see their entire life and how it will play out. The decisions you make are highly associated with how far you can see. It is very true that the farther you can see, the more likely you are to make better overall decisions. Let's use a good example that many of you can relate to. Think about a job offer you received when you were younger. Back then, it seemed so much easier to decide if the job was the right fit or not. As you got older and received multiple new job offers, you took longer to consider each. It became harder to decide which was best, partly because you had more variables to consider, such as family, real estate, and perhaps even where the job would take you in the long run. If you consider many of the earlier decisions you made in life, they were focused on addressing your immediate needs. But, as you grow older, you anticipate your future needs and choose differently, even if you have to sacrifice your current needs for the future ones. Most of life's experiences have shown you that thinking ahead is important, and your value for time has increased too. If you consider being proactive, you anticipate and act, and you do so in the best interest of the situation rather than the moment. It is the first moment that you consider others in your equation rather than just yourself, which is a trait of those in the third circle. When you think ahead, you take a proactive stance on where you want your life to go, and you start analyzing with every decision to determine if it is going to help you get there, even if certain dislikes appear early along the way as a result of your choice. The final aspect of being proactive is believing everything is in your control. You never allow yourself to be a victim, but rather a recipient of the choices you make. Making it a habit to take ownership of your outcomes is a very important trait that will be necessary before graduating to the third circle. The ownership, coupled with the extended vision of your life or situation, enables you to remain proactive and take a driver's approach to life rather than a passenger, one you'll need to head straight to the third circle in due time. Being consistent is the second habit that you learn to form in the second circle. You learn that instant gratification is a weakness, but more importantly, is not allowed in your life. Consistency and hard work lead to positive outcomes, and nothing great is achieved overnight. Being consistent, in this case, is not defined by doing things like a worker over and over again without purpose, but rather about how you think of life and your actions. Consistency in your thinking and your goals allows you to make sense of things as you rise to new heights each time. Making sense allows you good perspective on what you want and what you are doing to get there. Focus will be required to remain disciplined in your approach to success. Creating consistency for yourself is important and usually comes from observing successful traits of those around you. Similar to just about everything else we discussed, those either in your upbringing or in your entourage through the years influence you to adapt to becoming consistent. In my personal upbringing, I can say that my mother was a great example of someone consistent. I watched her not only work consistently for years, but also stick to being an entrepreneur over and over again, despite constant obstacles. Therefore, I am now very consistent in my delivery of actions, and also entrepreneurial in my thinking. If I look around me, many of the friends or people that I surround myself with are also consistent in their behaviors. So naturally, the behavior I absorb from a young age is that hard work and consistency are the key to creating the best outcomes. Consistency, and the behavior which eventually becomes habit, is ultimately your ability to make not giving up the actual habit itself. Confidence and belief from the first circle play a strong role in your ability to stay consistent and not to give up. The more you believe in something and the more confident you are that you can deliver on it, then the less likely you are to give up and the more energy you have to deliver the same performance consistently, even if it seems to be for a long period of time. When you learn that giving up is not an option, that you control that fear from the first circle to start building this habit, and you no longer need anyone to cheer you on, congratulations! You found this ticker you need to keep going, and suddenly feel a sense of purpose. It's a lot about why you work so hard that allows you to retain the same level of drive towards your habits. If you remind yourself often of why you do what you do, you refuel your body and mind to continue forward and remain consistent in everything. If you find yourself inconsistent, in general, you still hold a level of instant gratification from the first circle within you. You struggle with being quick to change what interests you and change your routines. You never allow something to work unless it works quickly. One reason is because you never evolved past the fear of not making money. You will continue to make money your priority until you can learn to actually make it, which remains difficult because you're inconsistent. You can learn to rid yourself of inconsistency based on your belief, confidence, and past success ratio, which is not defined here by your business success rate. If you have experienced enough positive wins in your life, then your confidence and belief in yourself almost makes it impossible to give up, and the actions leading to the outcome become more and more consistent with each try. For starters, you no longer chase money, but rather chase victory, which is a significant improvement in mindset. This is the first sign that true passion is emerging in your life, and, while not really a slice of any circle, passion by itself is like an inner body orbiting the second circle. It is an inevitable force created by the combination of belief, confidence, and lack of fear that launches you toward a new level of productivity. When thinking of the force described as passion, you must think of the adrenaline of fear, but thrown in reverse. Here is what I mean by that. When you are hanging off a cliff, the fear of death gives you wings, and your strength is multiplied by almost 5 times its normal level. This incredible, never-before-seen power manifests itself to ensure you don't fail. The same reaction occurs with passion, but doesn't require the death part. It simply is the first manifestation of purpose-driven living, which you will later discover in the third circle. Failing on your belief is as powerful as letting go of that cliff, and is not an option either. When this force takes over you, it seems like work becomes easy and almost routine, which is why people often say, "Do what you love, and you won't work a single day in your life." Love is an emotion evoked by passion. Therefore, spending all day doing something you love means you are reinforcing your belief, so this never-ending domino effect of love, belief, and passion trigger one another till completion. You can't give up until the end is reached. It is almost robotic in nature, and unbelievable to those who have never experienced passion to understand why and how you work so hard. But this power is setting you up for success to the greatest level, and allowing understanding that you have no limitations. Being self-motivated. When you accept that you have everything at stake and cannot give up, the natural realization occurs that no one is going to help you get there, especially since most people live in the first or second circle and are egocentric in nature. They won't help you if it doesn't benefit them. That means you alone are in charge. You find your ticker as a result, which happens to be your vision of your own success. Then you allow nothing, and I mean nothing, to sway you from believing it to be true. This ticker becomes your daily reminder of why you must succeed. It also helps you to remain motivated along the way. In most cases, a person's motivation is highly egocentric here, but that's okay, as it is heading towards the third circle. Materialistic things will motivate most until they can look past them. I myself bought a new exotic car each year to remind myself of why I worked so hard. I sometimes put myself financially at stake doing so, as I pushed harder to retain the luxury of keeping the car. Even though many might argue it to be a terrible financial decision to buy a new car every year, I believe that purchase to be an investment in myself, not the automobile. This behavior fueled me to keep going, and I can tell you it certainly helped me despite being difficult. The cars were a symbol to me, a sign of appreciation for where I was going. You too must find not only your ticker, but also what will keep you afloat when you slip down. That trigger cannot be for someone else. Do not make the mistake of working for your children, but rather find what satisfies your soul. While working for the benefit of others is very noble and a big part of the third circle, those who undertake this direction early on will burn out and often blame others for their failure. For example, if you work to please your wife only to find out that she is unappreciative, the negative response destroys your self-motivation. The motivating factor needs to be constant and certainly cannot be emotional in nature, or it will be unsustainable. If the underlying influence is out of your control, then it goes against what you learned so far. Once you've mastered these habits, you become much more in control of your destination and significantly strengthen your confidence level. You are now entering a whole new segment of your life where control of just about everything you do is in your hands. The phrase, "you can do anything you put your mind to," becomes a reality rather than a myth. That is, until you are faced with your greatest challenge, overcoming your emotions. Emotion. Put your pain in a box. Lock it down. Real men are made up of boxes, chambers of loss and triumph, of hurt and hope and love. No one is stronger or more dangerous than a man who can harness his emotions, his past. From An Act of Valor. This very true quote makes certain people much more dangerous than others. You hear the line, "think with your head, not with your heart," in business quite often because it is necessary to create a division of your feelings and emotions from your decision-making. In life, just like in business, this approach can be used the same way. Imagine how many of your friends or love relationships would be different if you had followed your head, not your heart. Imagine how much time you would have saved if you followed your head rather than be influenced by your heart. Those who can learn to differentiate the two distinguish themselves from others. This is the center of the second circle, and the main obstacle you must overcome to proceed past the second circle. If you can master your emotions, you will most certainly head to the next phase of your life, one that you will never be able to undo. Uncontrollable emotions are human weaknesses, but they also differentiate people from one another. It isn't what you do, but rather how you react that makes you who you are. If you think about those of us who stand up and fight, while others sit down and watch from the sidelines, it is the emotions of belief, confidence, and fear that enable some to rise above while others remain sitting down. The same can be said for just about everything else in life. There are those who fight and those who watch. While everything you learn to this point is relevant to your ability to control your emotions, it is your awareness that your emotions are your weakness that will enable you to overcome them. Emotional intelligence is key to taking control of your life and your reactions to life. It is the control of your emotions that makes some people so much stronger than others. It enables you to start transitioning into a world not entirely focused around you. As a result, you understand, at this stage, that the world does not revolve around you. You acquire a taste for understanding others around you and why they are how they are. As you discussed earlier, curiosity takes the better of you and forces you to seek information in order to be at peace, and such information is how we grow more emotional intelligence. Emotions are the barrier to your head and significantly change your thinking when allowed. These feelings can keep you from making correct decisions that benefit the overall aspect of the situation rather than just yourself. If you can never look past yourself, all your emotions and concerns are centered on you and dictate your actions every time. From I want, I need, I like, I cannot stand, or anything else that starts with I reflects a concern for yourself, not others. When you don't like something, you express your dislike, and, as a result, others know you don't want to be in that situation. You do so because you want them to react to your needs and your emotions, and you don't really care to express your point of view, but rather seek agreement or an action to make you feel better. Most of your emotional decisions, like those you choose to love or those you choose to work with, even your decisions around money, can be traced back to your egocentric nature, which you display in the first two circles of your life. Many of you are nodding your heads while reading this section because one or more of these examples applies to you. Think about yourself as a child and how relevant it was to you to argue back or start a fight when someone insulted your family or mother. People were just verbally assaulting you, but you needed to exercise a more severe physical response. Think about two people bumping into each other in a crowded area, like a nightclub or concert. One of them has absolute need to retaliate against the other if an apology or acknowledgement isn't made immediately. A significant other dumps you, and your response is to hate that person once you realize you can no longer have him or her. Or that person cheats on you, and in response, you cheat back. You get rejected after asking someone out, and then no longer feel that person is attractive when in reality they are no different than the person you wished you could have gotten to know. You receive a bad performance review at work. Your boss tells you that you are doing a poor job and you are extremely upset once he leaves. These are all examples of situations that generate a purely emotional reaction. The reason is, in part, because you are egocentric. In addition, all of those around you have always shown you what selfish looks like, so you tend to remain focused on your own feelings and opinions. You often process information with regards to how you feel about it. This is the wrong approach if you want to control your emotions and create emotional intelligence. You can strengthen your emotional intelligence. You simply have to let go. And what I mean by that is, you have to let go past how you feel towards information. When you receive information in life, which can be translated by news, opinions, commentaries, direct communication, or indirect reporting, you must not react. Instead, process it as just information, no matter what. Having no emotional reaction at all to information is the best way to condition your mind to avoid a poor reaction. When you have no immediate reaction to information, your mind naturally tends to be analytical and consider all the variables. But when emotions are involved, the opposite happens and the reaction can't be undone. By slowing down, you can more readily accept that people are acting on information and that they indeed were unable to control their emotional reaction. When they react in this way, they are expecting that reaction to continue. When you learn to stop the continuous flow of emotion, you become a very powerful individual. You understand how to not be vulnerable and why and where others are weak. As your environment constantly changes and people react to it emotionally, your heightened emotional intelligence allows you to gather all information before creating a reaction. Others, however, act on each piece of information, enabling them to only combat a small part of the problem, where you will actually create the environment you need for yourself to create complete change in your favor. Your ability to control how emotionally hurt you become makes you a more logical person. You see why people do what they do. By logically interpreting the information, you weigh both the source and the value of the information, rather than how you feel about it. This gives you a better perspective of its meaning. You understand the context of the information rather than what you are expected to do as a result. If you are in a situation where you are afraid because you've been told that you caused something bad to happen at work, fear can set in, and then panic can prevent action. Conversely, you can understand that someone is just communicating what occurred, not that you are at fault or will get fired. As a result, your mind focuses on the solution rather than the feeling. Learning to keep your feelings from paralyzing your actions enables you to make better decisions, rather than dwell on what doesn't work. The same example can be applied to financial management and how we think of money, which, despite not being an emotion itself, is the one item we are most emotional about. We love it, get greedy for it, and certainly don't want to part with it. The funniest part is that we allow money to impact our moods more than anything else. When decisions come to mind that are based on money, we respond emotionally, as we fear losing it. Think about stocks or investment opportunities. They are missed by many people who can't control their emotions. The fear consumes them, preventing action. This fear is what you must learn to control and disregard so that it doesn't become a paralysis on your entire life. Otherwise, it prevents you from taking on opportunities around you and from doing what you love. More importantly, such emotion prevents you from moving forward and growing. Emotional control is so difficult that there are a large number of people who cannot graduate this phase of the second circle. As a result, they never truly move on because they're unable to deal with their emotions. They don't get past it because they believe that the true nature of who you are is how much money you have or are going to make. They certainly have no understanding of how small they are in such a large world. Those of you that do move forward understand this a bit differently. The reality is that, as a person, you matter, but only to those around you, people that know you and like you. That, in itself, also describes how you feel towards others in return. If you like people, you remember them, help them, and take time to understand your feelings for them. Use your significant other as an example. Those who can't graduate past their emotional intelligence are highly egocentric and selfish. Therefore, you tend to fall in love and do the world for those they are with. You will fight, pay, and, in most cases, die for them. But you never understand why. You do these things because of how that person makes you feel. It is for your benefit, no matter how you look at it. You seek that continued feeling. If, however, you graduate and control your feelings, you question those feelings. If you would still give your life for that person, or spend every dime you have if they weren't with you as your significant other, but simply because you believed in their cause, then that is a more logical approach, rather than a selfish one. This is also the main reason for divorce. It isn't because of money itself, but rather how they feel towards each other and their behaviors, how someone spends money, for example, partly because of poor communication around those feelings. Those who exert little control over their emotions are in relationships because of the benefits or feelings they experience. As a result, they are addicted to that satisfaction. On the other hand, those with more control understand why they feel as such, and no longer care about how they feel towards the situation or the satisfaction it brings them. Instead, they appreciate the value of the person for who they are, not for how they make them feel, and as a result, start displaying very strong signs of selflessness in this phase. Logical choices lead to real results, while emotional choices lead to unstable choices. If the example above holds true, then no matter how your feelings changed, the core of your decision wouldn't, because you didn't make it because of how you felt, but rather because of how someone was. Being able to look past your world, your feelings, your disguise, and your emotions enables you to understand others and understand what makes them vulnerable. But more importantly, it enables you to realize that you are only as valuable as your actions. And if your actions are to pursue money all the time, then your value is not a dime more than how much of it you accumulated. I myself see my value as the experiences I have gone through and my ability to help others. As a result, I feel that I am only defining my existence through how many people I have actually helped. When you think of others and understand them, you find ways to help them, and therefore lead them, which takes you to our next slice, for those that move on past their emotions to the core of leadership. Leadership. When you get to the leadership stage of the second circle, it can mean two very different paths going forward, one of the manipulator or one of the helper. Even though it's possible to change your mind down the road, you might find it difficult to do so. The choice is usually a result of how you feel towards life and the combination of the experiences you have witnessed to that point. If you grew up around very kind and giving individuals who believed that a good life was about equality, kindness, and helping others, then you will most likely go through life serving humanity. On the other hand, if you were thrown in the real world alone and forced to survive, then the exact opposite occurs. Your mind's selfish nature manifests itself, making you more likely to manipulate the world to your advantage, and only to your advantage. The main difference is not the idea of manipulation, but rather who benefits from the manipulation. Leadership requires shaping environments, which can be looked at as manipulation in order to function best. Effective leadership benefits the followers first, not the leader. The army is a great example of this, as you have to break down the minds of the soldiers first, and then rebuild them to a stronger state. This strong approach benefits them in combat by making sure they are prepared to face their fears, and in real life because it gives them the confidence and habits needed to be successful. Becoming a manipulator occurs naturally at this stage of the second circle and comes from your ability to control your emotions. This stage takes the concept further because you realize that others cannot do the same, making them predictable. In this role, you control how others react to certain actions. If you know what makes people laugh or cry, you certainly have more power over them. This makes you a very powerful and influential person. Influence comes from having what others want or having learned to do what others don't know how to do, which creates an interesting energy based on belief. You feel that if they've done it, you can too. For this power to emerge, you, as the leader, must know what matters to that individual. You must not only show them you have achieved or attained what matters to them, but also did so from a similar platform. This explains why many of us admire rags-to-riches success stories. We truly do not appreciate when others, who have not earned their wealth, brag that they know the way. You simply cannot believe or understand how you can get there, and therefore influence doesn't occur. Then distrust and disbelief kicks in. This leads us to the next point. Great leaders must know how to identify individuals with similar values and beliefs. Without this, the power of influence cannot occur. Influence is a byproduct of belief, which can be translated here into mindset. You need to identify with others who believe what you believe and who understand why you believe, derived from their values, in order to be able to maximize a group's or following's true potential. In my corporate career, I positioned myself for success through this skill set. I focused my entire energy on hiring people who believed in the same things and shared similar values. This enabled me to predict their potential according to the group or type of personality trait. Based on their backgrounds, I knew who would be most influenced by me, which meant that they were more likely to follow instructions and learn faster than the average employee. With this distinction, I was able to win big and earn myself significant promotions early on. The icing on the cake was that they also advanced much faster as a result. This behavior, even though admirable, was one of a person in the second circle, as I benefited first. The same signs you recognize subconsciously when asking someone out or making friends are the same signs you learn to identify in plain sight, knowing who you are or why you do certain things. This differentiates good leaders from people claiming to be. Great leaders know their own signs. They have a clear view of why people should follow them, so their message is precise and rarely changes. Only their plans do. Great leaders understand that others don't share the same strengths, tolerance, and emotional intelligence, so they work hard to not only lead people, but also help them lead themselves eventually. It is possible for individuals in the first circle to maintain leadership positions on the job, at home, or in society from an early age. They might not have yet mastered how to be effective leaders, as they haven't established as much for themselves. Without that achievement, they'll encounter difficulty leading others. Certainly, it is possible, but will require the person in that leadership role to have significant self-strength and motivation. They must also be able to work continuously to improve, which they can do by observing good examples around them. These emerging leaders, however, will fail without the support of great mentorship and great leaders. This is why many organizations will not hire young leaders, because there is no substitute for time and experience. This combination allows us to define ourselves as helper or manipulator, and only then can we know our true leadership styles and intentions. This particular phase we are discussing, however, is not about your role at work or at home, but rather the skills you develop and your standpoint or view on society as a leader within a system. The system of your life is the one we are discussing here, and even though it's certainly very impacted by the functions you hold at work or home, it is not defined by a title or a salary.